love to start my day with a hearty bowl of Jan.
Michael.
Just call me Levinson in the morning, baby.
Michael.
Yes.
Something weird is going on.
Colin, what did Jan say?
I'm here to tell you that we are closing this Granton branch.
I don't understand.
The board voted last night to close your branch.
On whom's authority?
The board's.
Finally. I mean, it feels like, what is it, the pigeons are coming home to roost? Is that what it is? I don't remember what the saying is, but we have been hearing mumblings, rumblings, tumblings, and bumblings about the branch possibly closing for a long time. I mean, since the very beginning.
Yeah, I think it's been since the first episode.
Yeah.
They've been talking about downsizing.
Yes, it is something that we've been waiting for a long time, and sort of watching as Michael continues to sort of shenaniganize all the time and going, is he ever going to, like, is something going to happen from this? Are things going to change? And we finally see that things do change. And we've got branch closing, season 3, episode 7.
We have to just touch on the cold open because it's one of my favorite future Dwight. The whole prank that Jim plays on Dwight in the beginning of having stolen a box of Dwight's stationery and then sending him facts from the future. I think that is really funny. It's very Dwight, his reaction to it, because I feel like Dwight's not stupid. And we all know that and we've seen that. But Dwight is kind of, he has that, just in case mentality.
Yes, just in case
we're in the Matrix. Just in case there are super villains, you know, just in case Jim has telekinetic powers. And now we're seeing Dwight react in just in case this is a future Dwight situation, because he rather be the hero than
seem silly that he
let something get by him, because,
that's so,
you know,
funny.
Right?
I like that just in case, because it is. I mean, he runs across her. No.
Right, so just in case the coffee was actually poisoned, he saved the day. But, you know, if it weren't, that's fine. But, you know, just in case.
Just in the, because most of us, I think, would just be completely like, oh boy, this is just somebody teasing me or whatever. I don't believe this for a second. But for him, yeah, he's like a prepper through and through.
Yeah, and like a prepper meets a sci-fi nerd, meets like survivalist. Like, he's like everyday carry to the max. I mean, he has throwing stars all over the office. You know, like, he is so the just in case guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's his worst fear, is being caught off guard.
So that is the fun intro that we have, mm-hmm. and that's all great and good, but immediately from there we get into some scary stuff, because I love how this breakdown happens with Jan telling Michael, hey, she's just like she's very cold about it. She's very matter of fact about it. She's very get the point across. And I think it's because a little bit she knows how Michael is going to react. And so she needs to say what needs to be said quickly, because mm-hmm. as soon as he hears the bad news, he's spiraling. And as soon as he hears the bad news, he spirals.
Yes, he just has an absolute break. He can't hold it in. He's such a, he's so reactionary like that. I mean, especially when she tells him that he is a severance package person and not a moving on to Stanford person. he can't handle it. And he almost like, he starts all of the stages of grief, like, in his office.
Oh my goodness. Like, they're like playing over.
Like deflection and denial. And like, he's going through all of this.
Bargaining.
Yeah, exactly. He can't handle it. And we see everyone in the office noticing that something is going on, because Michael's having this severe reaction. And all right. This is where I'm going to start. I'm going to pull in some deep cuts here.
Okay.
Kevin is the first one up out of his seat talking to Pam about what's going on in there. There is this giant fan theory that Kevin, throughout the entire series, has been secretly embezzling money the whole time. And I want to bring this up because I recently kind of came across it, and it has been kind of in the back of my mind as I've been going through this watch through. And this particular moment kind of fit into this fan theory for me, because right away, no one else is getting up and like being like, why is Jan in there talking to Michael? And why is Michael freaking out? And so I think that Kevin had the kind of, if you go along with this fan theory, Kevin is seeing like, oh no, what's happening? Did they discover this like embezzling that I've been having going on? And now it's like coming to a head. And so he's like kind of extra on edge that this whole meeting closing situation might be because of him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because like he's so up there. He's like, Pam, you let me know. And he was like giving the little signals. We know from previous episodes from Casino Night that he has been a very successful gambler. So there's like all of these little things that have already come up.
Yes.
That kind of hint that Kevin is smarter than he appears.
Yeah. And later on, we hear that a mistake plus Kevin gets you home by 7. Although I'm not a very good Kevin impersonation.
So we'll put some links in the show notes. I want to find some links to all of this fan theory stuff, because it is really interesting and kind of very funny to start watching the show with this in mind. I feel like it's like reading into Shakespeare sometimes, where it's like, yeah, it probably was never there, but it's really funny that you can find all of these consistencies throughout the episodes that kind of hint to this and make it make sense. And it's like, wow, yeah, I could really see all of this being true. So this is one of them. We see in this episode a whole bunch of references to the webisodes that I'm always kind of vaguely aware of them. They're very hard to find they're fairly tricky, because it seems like NBC, right? Is that the network it was aired on?
Mm-hmm.
They had it on their website and when the show was airing, and they kind of taken it down. I can't seem to find it anywhere on their website, but they were actively pulling it off of YouTube. So they're very tricky to find. People have renamed things and you can kind of get a hold of them, but I'm not 100% sure that while I'm watching the YouTube ones, if they're all there or not. I mean, they're shot poorly. They're not super interesting. You know, I wouldn't say that they're amazing additions to The Office. They're just kind of nice little detail filler in situations. But in an episode like this that was aired on television, that we see kind of references to the episode, the webisodes, I find that then they become relevant.
Yeah. And I will say, I'm not sure. I'm looking to see if they're still available, but I purchased them all a while back in the iTunes store. We'll include a link, actually. I just found
that's
it,
good
it looks
to know.
Like they're still there. Yeah, so you can...
Looking for the freebies. I was trying to do the Kevin.
I'm not sure how much it costs because I've already purchased it, but Tiff, I sent you a link in Skype. If you click on it, you should be able to see how much it costs.
Great.
But yeah, there are 10 episodes. The last thing is a Dwight Schrute music video, which is really fun.
You can also get them on the DVD, the season... What is it? Season 3 DVD or season 5 DVD has all the webisodes on it. One of the box sets, you can get them as part of like the DVDs, but no one buys DVDs anymore. So
no, yeah, they don't.
You have that. All right. I see right here. They're all about $2.
Okay, sweet.
So yeah, there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on here. And I guess while we're in the same vein, kind of off the main topic of the episode, there's also the producer's cut situation that's going on here. So for anyone who watched this episode on Netflix, we are watching the producer's cut. You're not watching what actually aired originally for this episode. So there's a whole bunch of little additions. It doesn't seem to have affected how long the episode was. It's just some things got changed and switched around, and maybe there's like a few extra minutes of content. But as far as I know, in my Office life, this is the episode. I've never seen the aired version because I wasn't watching it when it was aired, because I've always been a cord cutter, so I've never had television in my adult life.
So the first time I ever watched this, I think I've talked about it before on this podcast, it was a snow day and I was at a friend's house, and so the next day we were watching Netflix. Someone said we should watch The Office, and I was like, I've not ever seen that. So we started watching it, and then I went home and was like, I'm obsessed with this show, and just continued watching it and watching it and watching, watching it all the way through. So yeah, I'm like curious now to try and search out the non-producer's cut of this episode, because I've only ever seen the producer's cut.
I want to ask you how you felt about producer's cut versus deleted scenes, because let me set this up for you, because I do not like going back and seeing the deleted scenes. I feel like they were deleted for a reason. They don't need to be there. They're usually extra and they're usually not great. And that's kind of how I feel a little bit about the webisodes too. It's like they weren't in the main series for a reason. It's like they give the super cut to, you know, the big cut to the fans, the super fans who really are hungry for more content. But I don't feel like it really adds to anything in the show. So I ignore deleted scenes. Now, the producer's cut feels like a different monster to me.
Yes. So I agree. I think that those two are certainly different. A deleted scene is a scene that when they sat down to create the episode, to edit the episode, and they're getting it down to the 22 minutes, they remove some scenes that they feel are sort of extra, they're fluff, they don't quite make sense, they don't work. Whereas the producer's cut is, this is how we wanted to show it, but we weren't able to because of that 22 minutes of space. Whereas again, like sometimes deleted scenes are a matter of this really just didn't work, or like we thought this was going to be funny and it's not funny, or it doesn't really make sense with the story, this, that, and the other. So sometimes a producer's cut can include deleted scenes, but for the most part, it's about what the intended episode would look like if a producer got their full choice. And so I am all about producer's cuts. I think, like, what is it? The Lord of the Rings, the producer's cut version is like a bajillion hours longer practically. But I, you know, love watching that one because it is the full and complete story that they wanted to tell. And the same applies here. I want to see what they intended and go with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I see that. I like the way you describe that. And here we are back at branch closing.
We are closing this Grant and Branch.
Michael has had a breakdown.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Jan has left. And he's supposed to not tell anybody. So what does he do? Well, he tells everybody.
He tries not to, but he can't help it.
Well, he's trying to be subtle about it, but he wants everyone to know because he wants to share his misery with everyone and commiserate with his family. And that's how he's looking at it. Like, he's mourning not so much the loss of his job, which I find really interesting. And he gets upset about that, but he's not like, I'm going to be destitute, me. He's like, he has this big, wonderful monologue about the people.
Let's see Josh replace these people. Let's see Josh find another Stanley. You think Stanleys grow on trees? Well, they don't. There is no Stanley tree. You think the world is crawling with Phyllises? Show me that farm. With Phyllises and Kevins sprouting up all over the place, right for the plucking. Show me that farm.
Aww. His people.
I think that that's so endearing that he focuses on losing the contact of everybody.
Because I think sometimes people will claim to be, you know, interested in more than just the work or what have you. But legitimately, like, this is his life. And he's through and through to the end. Like, that is what he cares about. These people are who he cares about. And he is, you know, going to keep doing whatever it is that he needs to do to make sure that they're going to be okay. And Michael is trying to get out this information, but he goes immediately to just like what it is in his mind, which is just like the end of the world versus some of the folks get to go to Stamford. And so we see how different people react to this episode because they are sort of processing this end of the world kind of news from Michael and how they all feel about it. And it's varied.
Yeah, I like when we see everyone's different reactions. We see their personalities coming out in those reactions. So we have the confessionals, the talking head interviews of each person, and we see how everyone's dealing with it. I'll just go a quick rundown. Phyllis tries to organize a lunch with everyone and that explodes in her face.
That broke my heart.
Roy is torn because he feels that loading boxes just won't have meaning anymore without Pam. Stanley is overjoyed because he's ready for retirement. Pam is indifferent. She has her big quitting story or like how she thinks she would have quit, but she's like, this way is fine too. I think she's has art school that she's been attending, and she kind of reveals that, and Roy had no idea. She's in an okay place about that. Mm-hmm. Kelly threatens to kill herself because she's losing Ryan. I love the vision, like her and all the makeup running down her face. We see a wonderful vision of Creed going around taking pictures being quote unquote nostalgic. No, he's posting everything on the internet and selling off of pieces of Dunder Mifflin. Which I find Creed. So funny. Meredith is on her sexual quest to find out who she promised to sleep with when on the last day of work.
Oh boy, yes.
So she's going around asking everybody.
Was it you I made the deal with? Was it you?
Yeah, she doesn't know. Oh, and Ryan. Ryan had a special delivery this morning that he feels really good about.
It makes perfect sense that it would happen today because I just received this in the mail. 1,000 business cards with this address and phone number.
Yeah, he just had all of his business cards printed because we just saw him on the sales call with Dwight. And so he's feeling like, okay, this is my job now. Ooh, not so much. So he is both distraught that he has ordered all these business cards, but he's also happy because he can kind of move on, and he broke up with Kelly and he was into that. So, oh, and we see Toby, who was hopeful about going to Costa Rica.
Oh, Tobes.
Oh, my goodness. And he has a meeting with Michael in this episode that Dwight keeps the cameras out of. And I thought that that was a nice little touch. We see a couple little camera interactions throughout this episode with Dwight and Michael in the car. There's some good eye contact. And then also Dwight actively keeping the cameras out of Michael's office when he's in there with Toby.
Yeah, because Michael's so upset that Toby knew about it. And that's, I find that scene, that little bit of that scene hilarious where he's like, we need to talk, essentially. Like, I'm so mad that you got to, that you heard about this and that you didn't tell your family, even though Michael spends the rest of the time telling Toby he's not part of the family, and not part of any family, because he got a divorce.
Oh, it's so hurtful. We see Michael head down to the warehouse to check on everyone down there, how they're going through all of this tragedy, as he thinks that, you know, he's trying to commiserate with everyone. But we find out that they're fine, because...
Oh, they're good.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, Bob Vance of Vance Refrigeration bought the warehouse, and so he's going to be using it to get, you know, refrigerators shipped out and whatever else. So they're all good.
Michael takes real offense to this. Yes. I love his little analogy of that this is his house and how he sees it.
This is my house. The CFO is taking away my house and giving it to Josh. And Josh is giving the garage to Bob Vance.
And he's so mad that somebody's like buying out from under him his house. And so that plays a huge role in the inspiration that he needs to confront David Wallace.
Yeah, he ends up getting a big plan in his head that him and Dwight are off to kind of save the day.
They're going to go. They're going to confront the CFO. They're going to confront David Wallace. They're going to talk to him and say, listen, it's a bad idea to shut down the Scranton branch.
All right, listen up. Some of you may have heard some rumors about the branch closing.
Like when you said the branch was closing?
But I am not going to take this lying down. I have a plan, and I am going to save our job. So just hang in there. Let's go.
Yes! Oh, good. You're bringing Dwight.
Yes. This might get ugly. I need backup.
So they take off, and everybody's just kind of like, okay, Michael, you do you. This is the start of sort of chaos reigning in the office whenever Jan does get there eventually.
We have a lot of people driving back and forth, pretty great distances. So we see we're going from Stamford, Connecticut to Scranton, back and forth. And then and Michael and Dwight drive to Mount Vernon, which is over actually near where I live. That's a pretty long drive.
Yeah. Do you know, I just noticed this the other day, something that started to bug me. Is how many conversations happen as folks are about to get into a car on shows. Like they have like an arm rested on the roof of the car and the other person's on the other side and they're both chatting and they both are sort of like have their hand at the door, but they're not getting in, and they get through whatever conversation they're supposed to have before they actually get in the car. And I'm like, I have long conversations within the vehicle. Why are we having all of our conversations and resolving things outside of the vehicle? That's not how, like, what are you going to spend the rest of the time doing? Listening to a podcast? Like, you can talk in the car. yeah. So yeah, it does make me think, like, wow, I wonder what these two characters or three or however many people are getting in the vehicle. Like, what would they be discussing in the vehicle? Because they did all the important story moving along stuff before they actually got into the car.
Yeah, we do see a couple good car scenes throughout the series. I mean, we do see them in the car together. I feel like they don't completely shy away from car.
Yeah, for
scenes.
Sure. Definitely not so much this show. And I think it's because it's documentary style. It doesn't matter if the camera is a little like lower quality, a little grainy, and looks a little like fisheye weird because like it adds to the story.
Yeah, you can tell that there's someone holding a camera sitting in the backseat. Like that yes. is a whole part of it.
Exactly.
We see a whole bunch of Stanford in this episode because what's going on is we're seeing kind of like this volley between Scranton closing and Stanford staying open. And so the celebration side over on Stanford.
Stanford, Connecticut.
And the defeat side over in Scranton. And we see a lot of Andy in this episode, and we see a lot of Andy's reactions. We see some of Andy's anger problems come out a little bit later. And we also see a lot of Andy's butt kissing when it comes to Josh.
Ladies and gentlemen, our fearless leader, Josh Porter. Josh, take a bow. Take a bow.
We see a lot of speculation going on, especially over who's coming to Stanford. And Jim, we know that he's curious about Pam, but he won't say it. And he is constantly asking. And it's like mm-hmm. one of those things. It's like, this is kind of an inappropriate question to be asking. Like, no one really cares. Everyone's focusing on other things right now. But it's one of the things that, like, if this is on your mind, it's like the thought virus that's in your head and you can't get it out. And you're just like, there's just something compelling you. Be like, just ask the question. Like, you know, the little evil thing on your shoulder says, ask the question. You need to know, like, maybe they'll tell you the answer now. And like, and then you see that coming from Jim. And later on when the tide tables have turned, then we see that coming from Pam too. Like, I like seeing these two people being super curious about where's everyone going to end up.
It's very touching. It makes you feel like, oh, they both, because we grow to see this synchronicity between them. Mm-hmm. And like they really do seem like star-crossed lovers, to bring back Romeo and Juliet. And that is clear here, where they're both sort of thinking the same thing and they really do care about each other.
So the big thing that happens is that Jan offers Josh from, well, I guess Josh is part of this deal. And so he knew that this was happening. And there's this giant restructuring going on that we find out. We start getting over the reveal of what corporate's intentions are here. So they close the Scranton branch in order for Josh to run the Stanford and a whole bunch of other branches, kind of like combining everything together. Mm-hmm. Josh, being, I guess, the savvy business person that he is, I don't know, like kind of undermining, he takes that offer and leverages it for a senior position with Dunder Mifflin's biggest competitor, Staples. And it's a pretty dirty thing to do because they in corporate were kind of changing everything, doing all of this to support one of their own and raise him up and give him a better position. And then he kind of takes that and throws it in their face and uses it to get a better job without telling anybody.
He waits until they are ready, like they've executed the plan essentially, without care for anyone else, including like his employees at his branch and the rest of the company. That's whenever he decides, okay, now I'm gonna, instead of just like at the beginning being honest about it, now they're doing this. And Jan is very frustrated because this whole thing was put together and now she has to figure out some way to fix it.
Yeah, because essentially she was orchestrating it. And we can tell that Josh knew what was going on because he kept dropping all of these hints where you don't know what's going to happen yet. And he kind of had this look on his face that he knew. And it's like you were hearing that same thing from Jan to the Scranton people, but that was more of like a cushioning the blow kind of don't panic. But coming from Josh, this is more of a, I have insider information about what I've been doing, so don't put the cart before the horse. And this is all going to come crashing down because I'm a sneaky sneak. And I love when Jim has that aside to the camera.
Yes, yes, me too.
Say what you will about Michael Scott, but he would never do that.
I love that this whole episode, we are kind of seeing it starts focusing on Michael's negative, unproductive qualities, why he would be a severance package person, why he would not be good to be like the head leader of all of these branches, mm-hmm. and why Jan's letting him go. Like, we are focusing a lot on his negative. He can't keep a secret, like all of this bad stuff that Michael is going through. But it comes around and shows that his loyalty is just absolutely unmatched. He has this core of decency and loyalty, and he is steadfast. And he would have never thought of being that Weasley.
Right. Yeah. Just hands down, that's not something he would do.
I think that that is a wonderful trait to have. And it's great that we're highlighting that in Michael. And it's great that someone like Jim, who kind of was on the front lines of Michael's insanity when he was working there, can still see that and can still value that. And I think that that is great that we're pitting Josh, who seems like he's capable, but is Weasley, with Michael, who seems incapable, but completely loyal and true.
In that instance, you can ask yourself, like, which one would you choose kind of thing? Mm-hmm. It's like, which would you rather have? And I think at the end of the day, folks would rather have the person that they can rely on.
You either have this person who's like very deceitful, but has a lot of charisma, versus Michael, who does not have the charisma. Well, sometimes he busts it out.
Yeah, he does. He can.
But otherwise is just very loyal.
He may not do things the way that you're expecting, but he'll be there to do things.
Mm-hmm. He absolutely would. I really like when we get the scene between Dwight and Michael over at the David Wallace house, because on their mission to go change the outcome of this whole downsizing and restructuring, they kind of have this moment where they are role playing what it would be like to talk to David Wallace. And it was Dwight's idea to have a strategy.
So, do you know what you're going to say when he shows up?
I will improvise. I will speak from the heart.
No. Bad idea. You need an attack plan. Here, I'll be him. You be you. Let's practice.
All right.
Dum-da-dum-da-dum. Coming home
from
work.
Excuse me. Mr. Wallace? David Wallace?
Yes? What is the meaning of this?
Can you tell us why you are shutting down Scranton and putting 15 people out of work?
Well, the branch is no longer financially viable. It's simple dollars and cents.
Yes, but these are employees, sir. These are human beings.
Listen, Scott. It's no longer financially viable. We're losing money. Okay? It's not a charity. It's a business. And it's a dying business.
And I love Dwight's acting out David Wallace, how accurate it is. Mm-hmm. And how cool and calm he is. And how it's the stuff he says is probably what David Wallace would say. And there's really no comeback for it. And that's where we see like Dwight's confidence. He has a really firm handle on what is going on. He's not letting his emotions get into it. He can really understand that in a business sense.
Yeah, but he feeds into Michael, you know, and what Michael wants.
But Michael reacts to it very emotionally.
Yeah, they kind of balance each other out in that way, don't they?
Another giant emotional reaction is Andy freaking out in the break room of Stanford when he finds out that it's going to be the Stanford branch that's closing and not Scranton.
Yeah, because he was so bro-y and very, like, prideful and so excited. And it's like, it's almost as if he didn't even care about the fact that it had anything to do with his job. It was all about the fact that this branch that he's a part of beat the other branch. It's very college. It's super college.
It's very college. His team won, you know.
Yes, his team
leader
won.
Was successful. Yeah, Josh, you, like he leads the charge when he thinks everything's going well, and then he freaks out when it's not. He trashes the room. I think that he's consistent. He's consistently inconsistent because he has these volatile reactions, but then he keeps trying to be the likable one, you know, like especially when Josh walks in on him destroying the office. He's like, oh, hey, Josh, what's up? You know?
Ugh.
So Michael decides to not answer his phone when Pam is trying to call and tell him that Jan stopped by again and everything has changed now because of Josh's undermining the whole situation. But then Dwight finally checks his voicemail. It's late at night, and or in at least in the evening, it's dark. And they celebrate that it's really Stanford that's closing and not Scranton. And they think that they did it, or at least they give themselves credit for
totally
doing it.
They totally think they did it. Like, I have to believe that they think they did it. And I'm trying to imagine, like, what in his head makes it so that he, especially Michael, like, what does he think that he did?
Maybe he doesn't even know what he did. He's right. Even like, I don't know how we did it, but we did it.
Oh, my God. What?
Stanford is closed. Michael, we're not closed. Stanford is closed. Stanford is closed.
We did it.
We did it. We did it.
We did it.
No.
We did it.
How did we do it? I don't understand.
And we get to see everyone's reactions again, like kind of in the reverse of how they feel about actually keeping their jobs when they were just kind of coming to terms with losing their jobs. And they all end up going out for a drink together, and Creed pays with all the money that he's made with selling off of half of the office supplies.
I hadn't even thought about that. That's funny.
Yeah, that's why they're like, oh, Creed's buying shots.
Wow.
But now we have some big things to look forward to, I feel like, in the next episode. Like, there's going to be some big changes now. Like, that Jim decides he's going to go back.
I think I am going to take that job.
Karen's going to go with him. We got a little confessional from Karen that she's into Jim.
I mean, I don't think he's into me or anything, but I'm kind of into him.
We have some big changes on the horizon.
Yes, we do. Some integration happening.
Scranton? It's not that bad.
And now let's talk about a very good video.
Ooh, yes. I do love this.
This is so much fun. We got a tweet from, I believe it's Hattie Turk. I apologize if I've mispronounced your name, but the tweet says, inspired by your show, my family did a Dunder Mifflin themed video for Halloween. And when you watch this video, it is incredible. It is a remake in a way of the Office intro. And it's mostly little babies. It's mostly little babies, and little kids like doing different things in their house, like microwave and eating. And at one point, one of the siblings shows some affection for the other sibling, and it's just so cute.
It's basically it's a remake of this guy's family life, but to the beats of the Office intro. So like, you have all of the same kind of montage moments that are in the Office, but for their family. And I think it's so cute. And it's not Halloween themed. It is, no. It's just life themed, and it's really, really good. And it's getting our Dundee.
It is getting our Dundee, which I've just decided to call the Too Cute. That's T-O-O cute exclamation point award.
That's such a Michael named award.
And that goes to, again, Hattie Turk over on Twitter. So thank you so much. Please get on up here and accept your Dundee. Brilliant.
Everyone go watch that. We'll put the link in our show notes, and it will also be on Twitter when we announce the Dundee for everyone to go and watch that really, really cute video.
Yes. Ugh. Well, Tiff, I think that just about does it. All that's left is to thank everyone for listening and tell them where they can check us out.
Yeah, so you can go check us out at tall_beats on Twitter. Send us messages and pictures and just fan love all over the place.
We love your fan love all over the place.
Oh my. And you can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts. We are part of the Incomparable Network, and a great way to support the show is to become an Incomparable member. And when you do that, you get great members only shows from everywhere, all over the network. And you get access to our conference room in Slack, where we chit chat about cool office stuff and share fun pictures. And it's just a nice little community. It's nice. What I like about it is it doesn't take up all of my day. Like, you know, it's just nice dipping in there here and
yeah,
there,
exactly.
Chatting with people. It's a great place to be. So you should definitely get on over there and hang with us.
We will, of course, be back next week for the episode called The Merger.